Shalom, good morning. This is Radio Shalom coming to you through Planet FM 104.6. Shalom, Rabbi Altshul.
Shalom, John.
Well, it grieves me to tell you that this morning is the last program that Rabbi Altshul is going to do with Radio Shalom. And I'm more sad than words can say, but he and his family have decided to make Aliyah again.
Well, it is the first time for most of the family, so.
And I won't ask you why, because I'll tell you off for deserting us. But we were talking about Tikkun Olam. Can you expound a bit on this?
Well, before I do that, certainly say that, Joan, these past 3 years, both in your company, in your good company, and the company of Niall out in the technique, who's pushing the buttons, if I may say so, it has been an absolute pleasure and a joy to sit here and chat to you. I've enjoyed our chats, and it doesn't have to be the last program. You just have to get your little tape recorder out, John, and then jump on a flight to Israel. We're more than happy to host you for lunches and dinners and breakfasts on end.
That is an offer I might not refuse, and you might be sorry that you...
Oh, please, God, that I should be sorry.
Look, a mother-in-law.
Oi, Gewalt. Oi, Gewalt. All right.
So...
Tikkun Olam. Well, you know... sort of comes out of the Kabbalah, the mystical side of Jewish religion. It's not mainstream, but there is an idea that when God created the world, he had so much cooking, if I may use such an expression, that one of the vessels broke. And, you know, once again, you know, we're using human language to try and describe something which is...
Indescribable
per its nature. I mean, certainly our finite understanding and intelligence is not capable of expressing it. But one of these vessels or spheres or whatever you want to call them in human language burst and split into billions and billions and billions and billions of little sparks that were imbued into everything created. Now, God, of course, could have gone about, you know, for God a million years is just as a blink of the eye. So he could have gone about and done it himself and get things back together again and finish it off. But he thought, no, I'll go on, I'll continue to create, and I will make something that will help me to give unto this being purpose. And that being became the human beings. That it became a task for mankind to uncover the divine spark of everything created. Go out into the world, be fruitful and multiply, guard the world, keep it, be a custodian, and in everything you do, look for the holy spark. Now, this of course also confronts us with the problem, according to some, that creation was not perfect. I mean, just because God saw that it was good doesn't mean that it was perfect. There is only one thing perfect, and that's God. Creation isn't necessarily perfect. I mean, we only have to open up our eyes and look around. Now, mankind goes into the world, and what does mankind do? Well, it ignores creation, it destroys nature, it destroys each other, indulges in wars, burn, rape, pillage, horrifying things, which certainly we're commanded not to do, even in the seven simple Noahide laws. Instead of thinking about that beautiful task that was bestowed upon us to uncover the divine in everything created. Tikkun means to repair. You know, you send your shop off in Israel to, you send your shop off, your car off to the shop in Israel, and you send it for tikkun. You know, repairing a car if you're a mechanic is one thing, but this planet has a lot of mechanics, but not all of them have bothered to read the manual. Not all of them care about what the simple task of mankind is, and that is to try and repair that, however minuscule it might be in the world, but repair that little crack and get everything on the right track. And then, with the perfection of creation, will come redemption.
For all mankind.
For all of mankind. I mean, we generally... Listen, we have a job that is ours, and hopefully we should look a little bit better to it than we sometimes do. But the Jewish persuasion is, or the Jewish view is, that all the people of the earth are God's people as long as they abide by seven simple things. One superior God, no idolatry, no murdering. It doesn't say killing, it's still murder. No, should we say, illicit sexual relations. No stealing. Creating courts of justice. That is, of course, the basis of organized society. And not eating the limb of a live animal. These were the seven agreements that...
Not eating the limb of
a living animal.
Never knew that one.
Well, you see? Eva minachai. You are not allowed to eat the limb of a living animal. For example, that's something that's come up modern times where we start to genetically modify beef, where we take out a small biopsy from the bone marrow of a cow, and then we put it into some different juices made from bovine embryos, and we can grow a steak. Now, the question is, well, they did last year in August. They it was slightly pricey. I think it was £175,000 for this steak. But they generated a hamburger. And Sergey Brin and another fella, Google founder and another rich guy, they sort of ate this burger and tested how it was, and apparently it was all right. The whole question then arises is, if we take a biopsy from a living animal, number one, thank God we won't have to kill the animal. And we can create, out of one tiny biopsy, we could create the equivalent of 150,000 hamburgers, or something that would otherwise take 440,000 heads of cattle.
And
we could feed the masses. I mean, right now, if a burger's a hundred or I don't know how many thousands and thousands of pounds, then, of course, it's not viable by now. But it will save the forest. It will save the water. It will save the atmosphere, because cows, as a matter of fact, are some of the most nasty ones to produce a gas, which is much worse than CO2, called methane. And they let it out both ends. But... that's a place where that rule might come into play, Eva Minachai, because if we take a biopsy from a living animal, are we then taking what is considered a limb from a living animal? And is that...
So who would debate that?
Well, the great rabbis of any generation would take that discussion and figure it out between them. And, of course, they will never agree. So one will say this and another one will say that, and the general way will come out somewhere in the middle. Judaism is a dialectic religion. It's this ongoing discussion.
But when you can take it that nobody is absolutely right,
well,
by your individual beliefs.
That's the problem, that nobody's absolutely right, because in the old days they would ask Moses, and Moses would say, just a moment, I'll ask upstairs, and he would get back to them. Now, we don't have that kind of interaction directly where we get a complete and full answer. We base most of the discussions that we've had. This is a funny story. Moses comes down from Sinai with the two tablets, and he starts, conveying the message, and everybody looks at him like, very, very puzzled. And Moshe says, I'm sorry, guys, it made perfect sense until the guys from the legal department got hold of it.
So it actually says tablets. What sort of tablets?
Sapphire. the midrash, the stories behind the Torah that are told, you know, the mices, whether they're booby mices or something else, they told that the first pair of tablets were made out of sapphire. So they were beautifully red with letters and the magnificent things, tells the Mishnah. You know, this is not in the Torah. This is just from the stories. But if you turn that around, you would still, everything would be still standing in the same way. So you could read them from both sides. And they were, of course, shattered because of the sin of the golden calf. Now, then God tells...
And all the shards went in the stream.
No, they didn't. As a matter of fact, they didn't. The shards were put into the Ark of the Covenant. They were nicely picked up and put into the Ark of the Covenant. And then Moses is told by God to carve a new set of tablets, which God then will write on. But as opposed to the first set, which Moses got, he had to carve number two himself. Now, fortunately, God showed him where to cut out the sapphire. And God also allowed him to keep the chips from the chopping. So Moses never were lacking for want for pretty stones to show around. I mean, not that there were any shops he could use it in or anything else, but he had plenty of pretty stones. And then he fashioned the second set of tablets.
From stone?
Yes, from sapphire.
The second also?
Yes. So they were made out of sapphire. And they were put into the Ark of Covenant.
Because I couldn't read anywhere when he came down from the mountain, what they were actually written on.
Well,
it doesn't tell you.
It says stone, but it doesn't say what kind of stone. So it does say, hew from the rock two new tablets. Yes. Then there's also the... There's the Mel Brooks version where Moses comes down and he says, I got here before you these 50, and then he loses one and says, oh, these 10 commandments. But that's, again, comedy is a completely different story. We were talking about Tikkun Olam, now we're getting off on a tangent.
Yes.
So I mean, the idea is that we can all participate in this Tikkun Olam. And how do you participate in Tikkun Olam? Well, one of the things we've talked about previously, tzedakah, is a way of Tikkun Olam, because you are redistributing justice. You're redistributing wealth within the community and making sure that everybody gets. And that is, you know, in an imperfect world, that's a way of trying to make it better. Teaching people the way that they're supposed to do, you know. We live in a world where the amount of information which are fed into our eyes, ears, every day is enormous, and we barely cope with it. And we don't always know what are the right things to do. You know, you look at TV and you look at the commercials and the consumerisms which it purports. You're sitting there, you know, thinking, oh, I got to buy. But you've got to ask yourself, do you really need it? Do you really need this to be more happy? Or is what you need to engage other human beings and figure out how to achieve a better community, whether it's on your street, whether it's in your neighborhood, or whether it's in your municipality, it doesn't really matter. And lift your eyes up from those smartphones. You know, when I walk down the street, you know, see half the people, they're looking at their toe tips. So you'd think, no, they've got their heads down their little phones and watching something or doing something, or, you know, and they just are missing what's going on behind them. Okay, I'm guilty. I got a smartphone. It's a nice little tool. But, you know, I try to put it away, and certainly when I'm with other people, and also when I walk, because if not, one day you'll get smacked by a car. God forbid.
So how does one go about repairing? Is what you consider needs repair, or which rabbis tell you needs repair, or what politicians tell you? Or
well, I'm not one here to say that you should believe in one particular group of people. I don't think that... if you open up your eyes and look around,
then you see too much.
Well, if you look around, you'll see that there are, well, fractures,
inequalities.
However you might be it in what would be Well, it depends on what do you consider a perfect society, right? What is a perfect world? For us Jews, we have a blueprint. We've got the Torah. For other communities, they might have other blueprints, and everybody has their perception of what is the perfect community. But one of them must be where we show full respect for each other, where we respect every part of creation, including the animals which are living amongst us, whether they are a source for food or whether we keep them because they're beautiful or they keep the grass down on our lawn. Also nature. I mean, look, to use a very coarse language, human beings have been very good at defecating where they eat. And that's sometimes rule number one. Don't do number one and number two in the same place or whatever. Hey, you know, but unfortunately, we've been polluting this world. And I know I sound like a saved tree hugger. But, and to some extent I am, you know. But we got to be realistic about what we can do in this world. I love meat. I do absolutely love meat. But I've also realized that eating, consuming large quantities of meat might not be beneficial for environment and for the ecosystem. Carrots are much better. I mean, look at the ratio. If you have a kilo of grain, you get half a kilo of chicken out of it at the end. If you have a kilo of grain, you get 100 grams of beef out of it at the end. How much can you feed with a kilo of grain? How much can you feed with a kilo of beef? So we live on a planet which by now, I think we've surpassed 6 billion people. And we've got to use our heads and try and get about it the best way. And if that means that, you know, some things we should do in another way, we should do it in another way. We were put on this earth not to rape it, but to look after it. Because it's a very, very special place. Even though they might have found planets out there where God might have created other worlds and other beings. What do I know? That's not my job. My job is to try and repair the fractures, the inequalities, the bumps in the curve on this planet. And this was
I rather like the analogy of looking for the missing spark. When you feel that, well, I can do something to remedy the sort of... I wonder if that's got the divine spark.
Well, there's a divine spark in everything. It depends on what to do with it. For example, you'd say, is there a divine spark in a carrot? And I'll tell you, yes, there is. Why? The second you say the blessing over that carrot, you have made yourself conscious that you're holding a carrot in your hand. You're about to take part or partake in a piece of creation that will hopefully do you well, which hopefully will be tasty, which comes from something greater than you. And in that second, you release the spark from the carrot. Now, it's not going to do much good for you, apart from your digestion, and you're going to have all the vitamins and all the good things, but you're not going to get a warm, fuzzy feeling out of that. But that's still sending a spark back to God. Now, when I sit here with you, Joan, and we talk, you know what? The sparks are flying. Because it's not just you and me. God is over us as well, and he is here. He is the third party to our discussion always. Because I'm a sum of things, and you're a sum of things, but when these two sums of things come together, there is something greater that's happening. That's dialogue. Dialogue is fantastic. Dialogue is where God is present between man and man.
So all the yeshivas where people are debating and one-to-one and so on, there's always a third party there.
Absolutely. And this is what the Pirkei Avot says. It says, you should always keep in mind that when you're talking, God is with you. There's something greater. And this is something that was picked up by Jewish philosophy. If you read the works of Franz Rosenzweig and Martin Buber, and to some extent also Immanuel Levinas, they focus very much on this interhuman relationship. That's their point of focus. It might happen other spheres of relationships. But where something greater occurs, Rosenzweig puts it up as a rectangular, where you have God on top and then you have man and world. Man in his dialogue with the world, whether he interacts with it actively or passively or with other man, it relates to something which is greater than them, that is God. Now, that's of course also below man and world is creation, but through God reveals himself through the world, through creation, and they all come together in redemption. And it makes up two triangulars put over each other that looks like the Star of David. And that's why the main work of Franz Rosenzweig is called Stern der Erlösung, the Star of Redemption. It's a beautiful work. And also
is
Martin
that
Buber's.
Also in German?
Aber doch. Yeah, jawohl.
Because I think nowadays there's not enough human speech and dialogue between people. It's more or less always on social media or on your...
That's it. And it's one-way communication. I'm sorry. Email, Facebook, Twitter, all of these, they're one-way communication. There is, you know, it's cause and effect, but it doesn't create that greater moment than when you sit there in a discussion. And people sometimes write me long letters and you know, they want a long answer. I said, I'm not going to write you a letter. What I'm going to do is, we're going to have a cup of coffee together. We're going to sit down and talk like two human beings. Because what if another question arises from my letter, you write me a new letter and a new letter. Writing letters, writing email is one-way communication. It's good for some things. But where really great things occur is when two human beings sit down over against each other and talk. And that is where God truly becomes a party to the dialogue.
It's music to my ears.
I didn't know I played the fiddle.
When you study to be a rabbi, do you read all these different...
No. That's the Tosafot, as we say. That's all the extras. You know, I also happen to have a university degree in modern philosophy.
And you refuse to talk about philosophers?
Yes, absolutely.
And now you're going, and I can't take advantage of it. You've got one over on me. Don't look so pleased about it.
This is one of the things you always have to do, Joni. You've got to leave them for wanting more.
But one of the things about the Torah is that everybody interprets it in a different way. So you've had generations of rabbis arguing over sentences, arguing over words, what they really mean. What is the sort of layman who says, what do I believe? You know, this is what it says, but it's not really saying that.
The world is an ongoing investigation. That's the whole thought about...
Write that down.
Well, there are so many ways to God, and God is in everything. You know, some of our greatest physicists and quantum mechanics and all of these people, Niels Bohr, for example, one of those who finished off with the quantum physics or laying the foundation stones for quantum physics, he got out into that gray sphere of science where, well... No matter how many formulas you put up, no matter how much you try to explain it, you reach a wall of understanding. And either you say, I'm not going to see what's behind the wall, or say, beyond can only be God. I mean, a lot of these brilliant minds, they have all, in one way or another, found God through science. And of course, because God created science. So why can't you see God and science? Of course you can. There is no schism between God and science. And that's why I'm saying, whether you're a rabbi, or you're a top-notch scientist, or you're Joe Schmo on the back of the row, doing your own thing, but that you're looking. The second you close your eyes and put your hands in your pockets and sit down and just wait, that's when you're not making much point, really. You got to do a little bit. You got to do something. You got to open your eyes, open your hands. You got to engage with the world. You got to engage with human beings. You got to get into dialogue, whether it's with the world or whether with mankind or with God. In the end, it all leads to God. That's my humble opinion, you know. What can I say? Try it. It's not dangerous at all.
So I can't have... dialogue with you through letters when you've gone to Israel.
No, you've got to come. You've got to come.
And I can read this as the latest.
No, you've got to come and see me.
Alibi.
That's okay.
Well, I do hope that you and your family will be very happy.
That's so shame.
In?
Well, the inn. In Israel, yes.
And that, I can't say that you will find what you're looking for because you found it.
No, I'm still, listen, I do not believe that my search is over. My search is not over. I found so many essential ingredients in my life. But am I done? Chas v'shalom. You know, I have an insatiable appetite for life and all the good things. There are a lot of sorrows. There are a lot of bad things on this road as well. But, you know, the sweet isn't as sweet if you haven't tasted the bitter. And the good isn't as good if you haven't experienced the bad things. At the end of the day, you know, that I should have done the best that was me. And then I'm sure that God in his infinite love will have great nachas for me and for my family and for my kids. That's really what we all need to do. Just the best that we can. We don't have to be Moses or Aaron or Miriam, because we're not. We don't have to be somebody that we're not. But we have to be ourselves. And we have to be ourselves with the abilities and possibilities that we, each and every single one of us, is imbued with. And if we use that as best we can, if we try to do our best in everything that we do with our abilities, whether you're a scholar or a simple gentleman or a lady or whatever, it doesn't matter. As long as you do the best you can and try to be yourself.
And if yourself is a nasty old thing.
Well, I don't really think, you know, we're all struggling with our dark sides. We all got dark sides. No, but, you know, the psalm says there is nobody on earth that is so perfect as never to have failed. And we all make mistakes.
Well, what I like about our...
But you can remember, you can do tikkun, you can make tikkun, so if you make a mistake, you do tikkun, and you know, you repair.
What I've liked about our heroes is that they're all very imperfect.
Absolutely.
You know, David, who I think was fantastic, he had a weak spot, a couple of weak spots.
Exactly, I was just about to say one weak spot. No, there was a few, yes. And everybody, I mean, we don't hear as much as about his son Shlomo, but with 1,000 wives... He must have had more than just... Shocking. Joan, please.
But nevertheless, in spite of their human weaknesses, their contribution was tremendous. But, I mean, there's some horrific stories.
Absolutely. But I think that's, you know, as it goes for leaders, I mean, Moses had his mistakes. Aaron did mistakes. Everybody we hear all along the way through biblical history, they all have a fracture somewhere. Whether it's a moral fracture or whether it's somewhere else they're fractured, they're not perfect. And this is the part of tikkun. We've got to strive. Okay, so we might never reach perfection. But if we don't at least try to be the perfect us, then you know, then creation becomes somewhat pointless to me. In my humble understanding.
So, Rabbi, for your last wish for this community... are you telling them?
Famous last words, look, no hands. Go on, guys. Keep up the good spirits and love each other. Look after each other. And grow, both in body and in spirit.
Thank you, Rabbi, and that was Rabbi Altshul's last program in Auckland because I have been unable to persuade him to return before he leaves for Israel. So thank you for listening. Don't forget to listen next Sunday at 10:10 to Radio Shalom. And if you've missed the program, you can go to www.planetaudio.org.nz/Radio Shalom.